start your engine.
Listening to 91.5 FM WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. Right now, you are tuned in to the Motorsports Hour, talking about all sorts of racing. It happens here on WPRK every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Let me give you the website to log on to if you would like to take part in the show. It is, as always, WPRK.org. That's WPRK.org. Log on. Online, chat with us, other listeners, all kinds of good stuff there at WPRK.org. And you can take us with you wherever you are in the world via the TuneIn app. That's right, the TuneIn app. Just do a search for PRK and, hey, we'll just live in your pocket there. My name's Clark. I'm your host, Long Sammy, tonight, as always, Mr. Chris Wire to Wire Wire. How you doing over there, my friend?
Happy spring.
Yes. Spring is here.
Apparently a little too soon.
Yeah? Yeah.
Well, a little too soon for me.
Not enough winter time for you?
No. No. I'm afraid that cold snap we had is going to be the last one.
Yeah, I don't
and
think
that we're, saddens me.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting another one. Tell you what, Chamber of Commerce weather today, 75 degrees, had a great lacrosse game that I called the broadcast on earlier. Unfortunately, Rollins women not able to beat the fifth-ranked team in the country. Lindenwood Lions got the W there, but a great game all around, though. Still, just some nice stuff going on today, man.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, there are worse places you could be than Florida this time of year.
Yeah, you know, you could be anywhere else, I'd say. It's time to be
you
a Floridian.
You know, California, Northern California.
Yeah, or you could be in Southern California where when it rains, everybody freaks out and they don't know how to do
anything. Amazing.
What is that?
I mean,
what is that?
They get rain for a couple hours in a day, and they lose their minds.
I mean, they're just apoplectic. I mean, what is that? I saw a news report. This was not recently, but this was months ago, where, you know, it was raining and the roads were wet, and they literally had stand-up news guy out there who literally looks at a puddle and says, "Now, we've been monitoring the level of this puddle this morning," and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what is wrong with these people? Just drive it. It's wet. So what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of sad. But, okay. You know, it's a conditioned response, and when you don't, you know, it's basically the way, you know, Florida drivers, you know, if there was ever any snow to arrive in Florida.
Oh, yeah. You'd shut down.
They would shut down.
Yeah. Now, I guess they get an earthquake, you know, here. They're out in L.A. They just kind of move on. That happened here in Florida. I would be terrified. I'd be sleeping outside of my house for the next, months, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it's, again, it's a conditioned response.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's not a show about that. It's a show about racing. And racing, guess what race we have to talk about, Wire?
Race champions?
Well, we can talk a little bit about that.
24 Hours of Dubai?
Well, I wasn't really going to get into that, but
24
yeah.
Hours of America go-kart race?
No, I did not see that one.
Oh, okay.
Where was the, there was a go-kart, there was a 24-hour go-kart race?
Yeah, there's always 24-hour go-kart races.
Why not?
I don't know where. I just, they just know, have. I saw it on the interweb.
All right. Are we in that desperate of a state from lack of racing since the Rolex 24 that we're watching 24-hour long go-kart races?
No, I didn't get to watch it. Oh, okay. It wasn't televised.
But, okay. That's
Jordan Taylor put some highlights up.
Yeah. I tell you what, he has like a little kart track, I think, set up in his driveway.
It's not his.
Yeah.
I don't know whose driveway it is, but I'd like to visit it.
Yeah. It looks like fun.
Yeah.
Fast. It's a good course. Good stuff.
Just don't run into the trees because there's no barriers.
Yeah. You make a mistake though, and, it could be bad. But we do have some news to talk about in the world of Formula One, and, well, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world of Formula One right now. We talked briefly about Bernie's exit and everything, and that's obviously big news. I think we'll touch on that a little bit more. But lots of stuff going on with teams. We're getting ready to see cars released here very, very shortly.
Yeah, this is always a fun time of year. You know, the liveries are sometimes leaked, you know, sometimes kept very close to the vest, and you know, they do their best to make a show of it. I mean, you can't have Ferrari, Mercedes, and BMW, you know, all doing it on the same day, so they space it out, and they each get their you know, their couple hours of fame, you know, on the internet. And so now with Facebook and things like that, I'm expecting live you know, Facebook intros and you know, Instagram stories and Snapchat and all this stuff. I fully expect to see the internet will be, social media anyway, will be fully involved in these launches. So it's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah. Now, it used to be the old way of doing this was they'd have this big, you know, press event in some far off place where they'd fly all these journalists and they'd talk about this, talk about that. And then they'd, you know, roll out the car, and it's a much more subdued thing than it used to be. But it relies much more heavily, like you said, on social media than anything else now.
Yeah, and why shouldn't it? I mean, it's the way to reach the most people and to do it in a way where you control everything. You know, it's just like anything press. You know, you can put stuff out there, and the press is going to take that, cherry pick what they want to write, and they're going to write it, favorable or unfavorable. By using social media, you're going direct to, you know, the people that are aligned with, you know, your channels, and you put out the message directly as you'd like them to see it.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. It's just those big kind of press events where you have all the glitzy glamour and everything, and, you know, people would have models and, you know, celebrities there releasing cars and all that kind of stuff. That's gone.
Well, I still expect to see some of the glam, you know, because you got to have people there. You got to have the flash bulbs going off. You got to have all that stuff taking place to make it the event that it is in person. But there again, these teams now, you know, their media people are fully empowered to make it whatever they want and to broadcast it out on their own so that everybody gets to see it the way they want to see it. And, you know, to me, it's great.
I think it's cool stuff. Well, Williams has actually already released a computer-generated model of the car that we've seen kind of a video of, but not the real thing. That'll be coming out later. Sauber is going to be first, actually, online, like we said, Monday, as in tomorrow. Then we've got Renault on Tuesday, Force India after that, Mercedes Thursday of this week, Ferrari would be that Friday as well. So lots of good stuff coming out. And then Sunday, week from today, we're going to see the Red Bull. All kinds of good stuff. All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting week. And it's exciting because this is the, you know, the new era of the modern Formula One car. And, you know, the old cars are basically scrapped. And, you know, we're starting with a fresh sheet of paper. So it's going to be interesting. And it's always interesting because given that the rule book is so tidy, you know, they specify so much, you know, that the engineers had to adhere to see all the different variations of how that's interpreted from an engineering standpoint and an aerodynamic standpoint is really interesting to people like me. I mean, gearhead kinds that, you know, they love how things work and how they're packaged and, you know, how they differ amongst the various brains, in Formula One.
Yeah. You know, kind of the three big changes I think that we're going to see on all the cars. Number one, the tires. Tires are wider. They're bigger. You remember the old school kind of, when was it, late 70s, early 80s, when we used to have these massively, just insanely wide tires on Formula One cars? We're not back to that, but we're much wider tires. They'll think they'll look a lot cooler, look more, a little more racy, all that kind of stuff. You know, when you look at Indy cars and stuff like that, when Indy cars running on oval circuits and everything, they've got that really tall, kind of narrowish tire on the front. And I've always looked at it and thought, it just looks weird to me. It's so tall and narrow.
Kart ran the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only reason that we overlooked it with Kart is because the rest of the car looks so cool.
Yeah.
Now, because the Indy cars don't look so great, you know, the fact that it's got a weird tire setup just stands out.
Yeah. But more old school Formula One, less Indy car on the new tires. Front wing is dramatically different. As well, it's going to be, you know, lower, all kinds of cool stuff, kind of bigger, some different planes and stuff. I think they'll look a lot cooler. And the rear wing looks a lot different too. So it's lower, but it's wider and it's kind of further back. It's pretty slick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the school is, or the jury is still out on whether or not this is going to be good for racing, because the idea is, you know, if they make it harder to pass, then the racing suffers. We'll see. I think it's going to be a cooler looking product.
Yeah.
That's still going to sound horrible, but
yeah,
you know, we can get a little bit of what we lost back. And at least we're not in, you know, the cow catcher days and when they, you know, two generations ago when they, was it 2013 when they came out with it and they really narrowed the rear wing and they made the front wing really wide and bulky and it was awful.
Then they said, okay, and then we're going to take the front wing and it's got to be a certain, you know, level above the, you know, surface of the track and all that. And it was bad.
It was really awful.
It was bad. Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, some changes in the world of Formula One. Looks like we could have some changes, not just this year, but some changes moving forward with the return of FODA, everybody's favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that's been, well, I thought it was dead, but I guess not.
It was, but now they're thinking about reuniting. They're getting the band back together. The Formula One Teams Association wants to get the band back together and, you know, talk about everything in the world of Formula One, how great it's going to be. Now, they've been offered an opportunity to buy into the sport of Formula One by Liberty Media. But, you know, you look back when Mr. Bernie Ecclestone said to all the teams, hey, why don't you buy into the commercial rights? Give me $100,000, I'll give you 10%. And I said, what are you, crazy? That's insane. We're not going to do that. Now that $100,000 will be worth, what, billions maybe? I don't know. Millions?
Hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions. Hundreds of millions at least. So are you going to bet on yourself? Are you going to bet on your sport? It's yet to be seen. I don't know who's going to buy in, who's not going to buy in. But talking about reforming FODA in an effort to, I guess, lobby the FIA to, you know, adjust the rule changes accordingly. You know, we have these completely new power plants. They're not completely new this season, but over the past few years, turbocharged V6 with all these, you know, heat and kinetic energy recovery systems that charge up this, you know, battery pack / whatever that is a hybrid, you know, crazy thing that makes the car go.
Yeah. We don't have an engine anymore.
No, we don't. Yeah, it's
a power plant.
It's a power unit. I mean, we don't say, oh, there was an engine failure. There was a failure in the power unit. So there's obviously a lot of people that might want a return to, you know, some loud V8s, some V10s or whatever it is, that make a cool sound and sound like a race car. A lot of the manufacturers, however, are not amongst them. I mean, Mercedes has come out and said before, listen, we have no interest in going back to that. You know, this is the cutting edge of technology for us. We use this as a test bed. We make our streetcars better because we're here in Formula One competing and learning about these different systems. We have no desire to go back to, you know, 90-degree V8s.
Yeah, and that's understandable. I mean, A, you've got a sizable financial investment in the current formula. And what works best for the teams is some consistency over a long period of time so that they can, A, get the gains out of that, you know, formula to use into their streetcars, but also to be able to balance the costs, you know, over a wider range of time rather than, you know, haphazardly changing, you know, power plant formulas every 2 or 3 years and not knowing what technology is going to be in vogue, you know, 3 years' time. They need some consistency and they need some longevity with the current formula. So, you know, say what you will about the power plant or the power units that we're using now. It's in the best interest right now of the series to continue on that path, given how much they've asked the teams to spend to revise the cars entirely, you know, going into this season. So, and then secondly, as we've discussed, you know, many times here, you mentioned it, the industry is going in that direction. There are more hybrids. You know, we have Formula E. You know, Audi has now gone from World Endurance Championship into Formula E more as a manufacturer. Turbos are all over the place at Mercedes and BMW and Porsche. And
everything has a turbo. You know, Ferrari.
Yeah. So to say that we go back to, you know, a V8, V10, V12 power plant anytime soon seems unrealistic, as much as I would like it to happen.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Just because I look at it, and I love the sound of a naturally aspirated Ferrari, you know, V8 or whatever it may be.
Sure. And I think, by and large, Formula One fans are with you on that.
But, yeah, we as Formula One fans have to face the fact that what performance car out there doesn't have a turbo now?
Well, we don't have a say in it either.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, you can say we vote with our dollars, but in reality, did you and I not watch every race last year?
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Well, not everybody did, though. That's the difference. Not everybody did. You know, viewership has declined.
But is that because of an engine note? Or is it something else?
I think it has to do with a lot of different factors.
Yeah.
A lot of different
things. I think it's one of many.
And I think we'll see how this new ownership, you know, shapes out. We've had Chase Carey say it's going to be like 21 Super Bowls. I love that mentality. The only race we've ever been to attended in person is the U.S. Grand Prix in Austin in 2012, which was spectacular, incredibly well run, great event, a huge success, and continues to be. And I do think more focus needs to be paid onto the event itself. Because not every event, we do know, not from first-hand experience, but let's look at Baku. Here was a race that, quite frankly, we all loved the track after you know, talking about how terrible this is going to be and, you know, why are we going to Baku? We see Baku finally and go, wow, this city street circuit is actually pretty darn good. Some incredibly high speeds. Looks fun, looks fast, looks exciting. On TV, it looked great. In person, I don't know really know what it looked like because nobody seemed to show up.
And nobody can tell you what it looked like because they really weren't there.
Nobody was there. You know, all these balconies that at Monaco or name your, you know, race that has balconies nearby, they'd be filled with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not in Baku.
Maybe we could go. Well, why don't we go?
Yeah, we'll get a place to Baku.
We could go. I imagine we could probably go for cheap.
Yeah. Tickets are still available. We know that. So I think more effort needs to be put on that. You know, we've seen the German Grand Prix in years past with, you know, just terrible attendance figures.
Well, and here's what I'm taking from that comment, you know, by Liberty Media about the 21 Super Bowls. And that is exactly what you're talking about. If you look and contrast that with Bernie's basically, give me a check. Do what you want to do, you know, with the event. Yeah. Promote it. You know, maybe we can throw a little help your way, give you some ideas, give you some support here and there. By and large, as long as you make enough money to give me my check, you know, you run it the way you want to. And as long as I'm not inconvenienced while I'm there or see something that's egregious or, you know, the teams are all complaining because, you know, their last year's leftover food is still in the refrigerator, then, you know, he wasn't too concerned about it. But I think Liberty Media will not necessarily take a hands-on approach to how the events are run, but they will more actively support the promoters that are putting these events on to make it a must-see event, to make an event that rewards you for going as opposed to sitting home and watching it on television. And I think that bodes well as long as they're able to pull it off.
Yeah.
Because I think, honestly, if you look at, you know, Coda or whatever, Coda does a great job. If you're on their email list, they're always updating you about new things they're adding to Formula One weekend or Superbike weekend or whatever is going on. So they keep you well informed, and they're always trying to add value to, you know, that weekend. And so if they can take that and then get, you know, an additional layer of support from Formula One itself, you know, sky could be the limit.
Yeah.
As long as they do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. It really could. There's a lot of opportunities for making these events much bigger, better in person through better promotion. And it wasn't just the race that was at Austin. They had, you know, race weekend set up in downtown. They have all kinds of stuff. This past year, they had the Roots and Taylor Swift. Performing?
Last year was Taylor Swift, yeah. And I'm not sure who else was there, but you may be right.
I mean,
T-Swizzle.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. I might not be the biggest T-Swizzle fan, but, you know, it's still good stuff.
Well, it speaks to the level of the event.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it gives it, you know, a higher profile than people might think. You know, Taylor Swift's going to a Formula One. What's a Formula One race? All of a sudden, it opens up a market that, you know, people never would have guessed. And then, Oh, that's that racing dad's been watching. You know, hey, Dad, can we go to that event? Now you got, you know, an interest.
Now you want to go.
Now you got some support in the household. Hey, let's all go, you know, that kind of thing. It just, you know, it reaches out into a market that otherwise wouldn't be tapped. And, you know, maybe you get something from it.
Yeah. Maybe you're getting some new fans. I don't think you're losing any Formula One fans because you have Taylor Swift there.
No.
But I think
I would still go.
Yeah, I would still go even though Taylor Swift was there. And hey, you might gain some of those T-Sizzle, Swizzle, Schnitzel fans, whatever.
Sure. Schnitzel.
Yeah. You might gain some of those fans.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about gardening leave.
I don't have it.
You don't have gardening leave?
Try as I may.
Yeah, I've never been able to have gardening leave either. But, you know, the standard practice of people being paid to not work, which happens in Formula One all the time when you have a really smart, technical person who decides to change roles. And we have two of those that have been big, big news recently. And that is that Patty Lowe leaving Mercedes, going to Williams, which I'm starting to see this as a little interesting of kind of people starting to depart the Mercedes train a little bit. You know, maybe this could be the start of their, not downfall, we'll call it, but just the start of their leveling. They've been so dominant. And now when you have these kind of key people starting to make moves, obviously Nico Rosberg, now, you know, kind of chief technical director, Patty Lowe moving on, and heading to Williams. I think that can mean some serious and significant changes at Mercedes.
Well, it certainly would, you would expect it to have an effect. Whether it does ultimately, we won't know. But I don't see this as, you know, a knock on Mercedes, like they're doing anything wrong or treating their people badly or anything. You look at from Patty Lowe's standpoint, what's his next logical upgrade? Is to be Toto Wolff. Where's Toto Wolff going?
He's not going anywhere.
So your ceiling has been hit effectively at Mercedes-Benz. The only way to, you know, to broaden yourself, to raise your profile, to get another promotion is to move to a different team. And Williams makes perfect sense because Patrick Head is on his way out and they're still running Mercedes product. I mean, it's a legendary team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've always liked Williams.
Second most successful team in Formula One history is Williams.
And, you know, if you know, they had some success 2 years ago. They were kind of off the pace this past year. If he can turn that around and bring him to the fore, they got a young kid in Lance Stroll who could be something. We don't know. But he was plucked, by Williams, and, you know, some call him a paid driver because dad's got a lot of money, but we'll see. We will see.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a seat to fill in Botas, but he's got Felipe Massa as a teammate, so he could be up to speed quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Williams has a lot of potential, this year, with the return of Felipe Massa after his short-lived retirement. I just think that there's a lot of opportunities for Williams to step back into the winning ways that they just were. I think bringing in Patty Lowe is definitely a successful move for Williams. You know, as far as Mercedes, they've announced a new technical director there, James Allison, who came from Ferrari. You remember he was at Ferrari, and then he was kind of fired or, you know, whatever, just said, hey, we're done with you. I think there was possibly some personal issues going on with Mr. Sergio Marchionne in the world of Ferrari that might have led to that.
Well, I've read nothing to that, you know, effect. I mean, it was unfortunate, you know, given the fact that James Allison did have, you know, some personal tragedy in his life, and then to get sacked by Ferrari, you know, shortly thereafter. It's not an enviable thing for anybody involved. No. I got to imagine that it was hard on both sides, but, you know, good for him that, you know, he landed somewhere. And I mean, at this point in time in Formula One, where else would you like to land, you know, after a year like that, except at Mercedes?
Yeah, that's the place to be.
That's certainly, you know, puts you on the upswing.
It's the place to be. Let's talk a little bit about Mr. Pascal Wehrlein. Did you watch the Race of Champions wire?
I didn't.
Neither did I. And here's why. I used to think it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Remember, they used to run it in the Canary Islands years ago. And it was really slick. And then they, you know, would do it in the Stade de France. And it was unique and it was cool. And now it's become just kind of the same thing.
They stadiumized it. You know, it had to be now in a stadium.
It was in Miami. I mean, we could have gone. It was in the Marlins baseball stadium.
Then. Yeah. But you're still trying to take a motorsports venue and condense it into something that'll fit, you know, in a sardine can.
Yeah.
You know, basically. So, you know, in order to make it competitive, you have to make it technical, but it's not necessarily fast. And, you know, so it is what it is. I mean, it's still competitive. They still make the best of it. You know, the drivers are made available, you know, for various press things and fan interaction and that kind of stuff. And, you know, for the casual fan that might not go to an IndyCar race or a Formula One race or something like that, it gives them a chance to see them all at once.
Yeah, it was not hugely attended this year, but Pascal Wehrlein had a bizarre accident where he rolled this kind of three-wheeled thing over and, you know, kind of hit this barrier, this plastic barrier thing, and looked, you know, scary when you saw it, but he popped out. He was okay. Hey, he's good to go, right? Well, apparently he's not going to be testing. Some injuries derived from that accident. He's not going to be able to compete in the first test.
Well, that's quite interesting.
You know, it's unfortunate. And here's what I don't like about this is you can see all the other teams now going, okay, you know that Race of Champions thing? You know that Le Mans thing? You know that Rolex 24 thing or that, you know, whatever thing? Name your other event here, that Dakar Rally thing. Yeah, you can't do that. Absolutely not.
Yeah, which is a shame because then Nico Hülkenberg won't win Le Mans again.
Yeah, and we haven't heard that yet, but I have a feeling this will definitely have the effect because Wehrlein's going to miss some testing at the preseason.
Well, I mean, you can say what you want about that. Every team's going to react to it differently. Certainly, the Race of Champions is not generally a high-risk event.
No, it's not.
So, you know, Vettel was there, so Ferrari apparently has no qualms about, you know, sending him out to compete like that. you know, it's the chances of it being a Robert Kubica kind of injury. Yeah, probably very, very remote.
Well, I'm glad you brought that name up, but we're going to talk about Robert Kubica later in the show when we start talking about some stuff from the world of sports car racing. Other kind of big stuff going on in the world of Formula One. Looks like, I think this is kind of cool, McLaren might revert to their kind of original orange livery this year. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it won't say Marlboro across it anywhere, but retro things like that still get me. If they're the right livery. I mean, nobody wants to see the Jordan Bumblebee look anytime soon. But, you know, the golf livery is always tasty.
Yeah.
And McLaren, I say do it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Couple other kind of things that just rumblings going on in the world of Formula One. Volkswagen, who, you know, pulled Audi out of the World Endurance Championship, is now saying that we might be interested in Formula One in the future. You know, opportunity to obviously do something with all this technology that we have there that's completely unrelated to diesels, unlike their car in the World Endurance Championship. And I don't know. We've just heard some rumblings about that kind of thing. Also, some talk that BMW may be getting involved with McLaren, that maybe Honda, the relationship there isn't as good as it as some people seem.
Well, I mean, that would be unfortunate because they did make some strides last year, and I would expect further improvement this year. You know, we're on, what, year three now? So I think that originally was their plan, a three-year plan. At least, you know, that's what Fernando alluded to a while back. So it'll be interesting. You know, there was a statement made by Ron Dennis, the next, you know, constructor championship is going to be McLaren. He didn't say when, but, you know, if Mercedes wins the next five, McLaren could still be the next constructor champion.
There you go. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll see. I think that going back to, you know, Volkswagen, they don't really have a hybrid presence, so they could very well use the, you know, a Formula One relationship to help kind of boost that, you know, in their road going cars, because they're behind most of the manufacturers as far as that stuff goes. You know, having focused so heavily on the diesel, which let them down, and BMW. I don't know. I don't know that they would fully commit to it in a way that you need to.
You know, BMW has, well, we've heard recently, as recently as what, a year and a half ago, maybe, that BMW came out and said, hey, there's been a lot of talk about us going into Formula One. We're not going into Formula One. We're kind of doubling down back on sports car racing and everything and all that kind of stuff. And, okay, good, you know, because typically when you see that, when you see a move into one form of motorsport, especially Formula One, everything else kind of dries up. You know, there's a lot of Ferraris being raced out there in other forms of sports car racing, but they're not factory efforts per se. You know, that's not the Ferrari team, factory team. It's a racing team that uses a Ferrari. And yeah, you know, BMWs have some factory efforts going on in the world of sports car racing. And nonetheless, it's just, you see that kind of stuff dry up a lot when you start focusing on Formula One. And I don't know, you know, would BMW do it? Who knows? They have before. They've been successful before. They've won before.
Yeah, but how long did they commit for? I mean, it's here again, gone tomorrow kind of thing. And I would rather not see that happen. I think that BMW does a tremendous job with what they're currently involved in. If you think in terms of DTM, how successful they've been since re-entering that series.
Yeah.
Obviously the, you know, the IMSA involvement, their success has been a little spotty, but they're competitive. The cars look good and, you know, they're involved both in GT Le Mans and GT Daytona. So they have a presence, and I think that's really where their fan base is the sports car realm, not so much the, you know, the Formula One realm.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Everybody talks about, you know, the BMW, the ultimate driving machine and all this stuff. And let's be honest, Formula One is something different. That's more, it's just something different. It's something different. You know, I the idea that, hey, I can go out and buy the car that I'm seeing racing at Daytona, that I'm seeing racing at Sebring, so on and so forth. I can go out, they can win on Sunday, and I can go buy it on Monday. Sell on, win on Sunday, sell on Monday, that old adage about, you know, racing and how it affects car sales. And maybe it's not as true as it used to be, but it's true for a lot of enthusiasts. They want to be able to see the car that they drive or that they, you know, want to drive or will drive or whatever, racing on the racetrack and competing and winning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no market savvy guy, and I don't claim to be, but I would think that, you know, the level of support that BMW gets from its, for its road cars, you know, the M series cars for most part, why they don't have a customer program like Porsche has.
Or Audi.
I don't understand it.
Audi has a wonderful, Porsche customer racing program that they've put in place.
Yeah. And in short time too. I mean, just since the R8 came out, you know, they had cars racing and World Challenge and so forth, the RS6 and so forth, you know, over the years, and the S4, but it wasn't really until the R8 came out that they really, focused on a true customer program. And, you know, they had the template from Porsche on how to do it and do it well. And then they developed, you know, Audi Racing North America and all this. And now they've got it firmly in place. And to me, BMW has kind of missed that whole thing because there are plenty of people that would go out, I have to imagine, and buy a factory built BMW race car shipped over here, offloaded into the shop and bolt all your, you know, your particular, you know, legal, toy, you know, trinkets on it and make it competitive and you know, be bolstered by a you know, a national support mechanism through BMW in a racing program. And again, you got Audi and Porsche doing it successfully, and BMW I think has kind of missed the mark on that.
Yeah, I think they have. Well, let's talk about some sports car racing, and let's talk about what we've got going on in the world of sports car racing. And that, well, we are going to have some changes in the world of IMSA in the form of some balance of performance changes. Now, Wire, we talked about this after the race and said, yeah, you know, we need to do something about DPI because, quite frankly, the Cadillacs just dominated. They just ran away from everybody, more or less. It was, you know, for the first couple hours, it looked like, you know, well, maybe the Mazdas could do something, but they're not quite there on pace. But, you know, maybe so-and-so could do something. Some big changes to all of the DPI cars up front, changing restrictors, taking 7 liters of fuel out of the Cadillacs. That's significant.
Well, and those are the things that you'll have to do if you cannot get some of that performance back. So, say, for instance, you know, Cadillac, even with the restrictor, has, and honestly, you got to remember, some of those engines, you can only go so small on a restrictor before you're actually doing harm to the motor.
Yeah.
So, you know, they may have reached their limit on how small they can go on a restrictor. And if those engines are still too powerful, you know, for the competition, then you have to make them pit more. Or you have to make them run, you know, on a different map to be able to reach the same level of laps at a particular track. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was clear they had to do something. I just don't know what they had available to them. But it is interesting to see what's going on. What else did we get?
Well, we got 1.5 millimeter restrictors on the Cadillac DPIs, along with a reduction of fuel there. Mazda also having a reduction in turbo boost and, you know, some other kind of turbo boost things with the Nissans as well. In other classes in the GT Daytona, where the Acura is getting a lot lighter, Ferrari is getting heavier, so is the Lexus. You've got some restrictors on the Lamborghini and the Lexus getting a little bit bigger and fuel capacity getting bigger as well. So GT Daytona making some changes there. But, you know, as far as LMP, or excuse me, not LMP, but rather, you know, GT Le Mans, they kind of listened to us. The BMW M6, 10 kilogram rather, weight break. Otherwise, they're leaving it the same, which we said, do not change.
Don't touch it.
GT Le Mans.
Don't touch it.
It's perfect.
Anybody
don't touch it. It ain't broke. Don't fix it.
Oh,
we had a
goodness.
Fantastic race, and thankfully, they've listened to us. And they said, you know what?
Well, this show is far-reaching.
Hey, it makes perfect sense because GT Le Mans was a great battle. It was anybody's race until the end of it. And the only thing they've done, the only team that really wasn't a factor in that race was the BMW team. And they said, okay, we'll make you get a little bit faster. We'll take some weight off you and help you out there. But
that might have a bigger.
And they did the right thing.
Yeah, that might have a bigger. I mean, obviously, they don't want to mess with it. But if they needed to give something to BMW, they gave it incrementally. They didn't, fortunately, make a wholesale change that allow, you know, the next race, suddenly BMW is going to be the class of the field and everybody else is going to be an also-ran.
Yeah.
You don't want the pendulum to swing back too far in the other direction.
Yeah, and you run that risk sometimes when you have those changes. But we'll actually have some testing coming up in Sebring prior to the 12 hours of Sebring. So we'll talk about that, obviously, as well once that kind of releases. I'm really looking forward to the season. In IMSA. I think it's going to be fantastic.
I think it will, and I think it'll only get better. I mean, you might be hard-pressed to say that, you know, the race in Canada get any better than what Daytona was, but in fact, you know, given the disparity between the Cadillacs and the others in DPI, it can get better.
Yeah.
Which is encouraging because they're, you know, they're going in the right direction. They obviously started out with a brand new formula for cars this year. And did a pretty good job.
Yes,
I mean,
they did.
It'd be hard, you know, we're nitpicking really as to what, you know, might need to be done to make the racing more competitive, but it isn't a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to Sebring.
Now we talked about this, about the GT Daytona cars. We talked about this a few weeks back where we had lots of issues with tires letting go on the GT Daytona cars, the wet weather tires at Daytona on the high banking at night and, you know, rear tires coming apart. And we mentioned that and we, you know, talked about it and said, hey, this is an issue, but let's see how they address it kind of thing. And well, Continental has come out and said what they're going to do is come out with a new tire for GT Daytona before next season.
So what's that leave for this season?
Well, here's the issue. I don't think it will create an issue in any other racetrack because it's one of those things that there's such unique tire loading at Daytona from any other racetrack that was, you know, kind of the cause of the issue more than anything else.
Did they specify what technically they found? I mean, is it something they've discovered or do they just say, you know, we recognize that there's a problem and we don't think it's going to be an issue for the rest of the season, but we will address it by next season.
Shoulder fatigue due to underinflated tires.
Well, then it sounds to me like they're going to rectify it with a recommended pressure minimum and then fully address it by next year.
Yeah. So that's the issue, but you're not going to see these loads on tires in other tracks.
True.
So just the way the nature of, you know, 38 degree banking there?
31 at Daytona.
Sorry, 33 at Talladega and 31 at Daytona.
Yeah.
But nonetheless,
Daytona,
yeah. And Talladega. But nonetheless, with that banking, with those high speeds reach, with the way the cars are loaded and designed and set up and everything, and the way camber is structured and all that kind of stuff, it makes it very, very difficult on some tires. And, well,
here's the other thing that weren't counting on. Temperature.
Yeah, the temperature was, well, it was wet and cold and dark and rainy and just wet and cold.
Yeah, and so how many laps did they go out on these tires and try to get them up to temperature by running them hard to build heat. And, you know, the cold wouldn't let it and the wet didn't help it. And yet, you know, they're up on the banking doing 150 plus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a real issue.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the world of World Endurance Championship racing and a little bit about the 24 hours of Le Mans. Yes, it's early. June is a long way away, but entry list is out for Le Mans this year. Entry list is out. And you mentioned somebody earlier who I want to bring back up. Robert Kubica will be driving at the 24 hours of Le Mans this year in the top level. He'll be driving for the Bike Holes Racing team. That is it's an LMP1 car prototype pointing into the field. No, it's not a factory, you know, effort, but nonetheless, be great to see Robert Kubica back in a top flight outfit.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's, I think he brings nothing but positives to it. I mean, he's hungry. Guy's been out of racing for at the top level for a number of years now.
Yeah. He's raced, you know, some other stuff here and there, but to see him back in a, especially in a prototype one, is just cool.
And, you know, what the guy went through, this is the kind of thing that this is a not an underdog story, but this is a comeback story.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I will root for him just on a personal level, just to see him achieve some success, you know, because a lot of his potential was unfulfilled.
Yeah, it was.
And you will never know what that was, but if he can come back in a privateer, you know, car and wins, say he wins, you know, the petrol class of LMP1.
Well, he will if he finishes, because he's the only car in it, or he's the only car in the non-hybrid class, I guess.
Oh, so Rebellion is not.
Rebellion is not there.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, well, maybe he beats all the rest of them.
Yeah,
maybe
who knows?
He beats all the, who knows? But I would like to see him, you know, given what he's been through, I'd like to see him, you know, back in a top flight unit.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about that top flight area of the grid. Two Porsches up there, and then three Toyotas. You know, no huge surprises there in the world of driver lineups and stuff like that. We really won't get into that. Now, LMP2. You think this class is, we don't really pay too much attention to it and everything. But now with these changes with DPI and all this kind of stuff, some big changes. Well, how about this? 25 cars in LMP2. 25 cars.
I think it's spectacular. I think it's just what they wanted. When they aligned the new DPI class with LMP2, it offered the chance for these teams to do exactly what's happening. And that's make themselves available to go to Le Mans and, you know, become part of it. And, you know, we talked about this the end of the last season and early this year. The fact that Audi pulled out when they were only, you know, one of three teams running at the pointy end of the field anyway, doesn't bode well for the series.
Right.
So the fact that you can get 25 P2 cars to run, even if it's just Le Mans, does help out immensely.
Absolutely.
Because it you know, who knows? With the nature of LMP1, it might run down to the last lap like it did last year, or it might be over 8 hours in.
Yeah.
You know, through attrition or whatnot. But if you got 25 P2 cars, you could have conceivably a P2 overall winner.
Yeah, there could be. There very well could be.
Because you're only dealing with, what, six cars in LMP1, and they're all very complex machinery. They could easily succumb to attrition, and you could have a P2 overall winner, and then it would be a battle.
Yeah, it'd be good stuff.
It'd be a real battle.
It'd be good stuff. GT Pro Corvette flying the American flag there again. And, of course, Ford Chip Ganassi going back. Two-car effort from Chevy, four-car effort from Ford.
Only four?
Only four.
Why not eight?
Yeah, I thought, you know, it makes it much easier. The more cars you have in the race, better chance you have of winning.
The price of sand went up.
Oh, did Sand is more expensive?
Sand is more expensive.
Yeah, well, I need to buy some sand right now, but that's a different story. Ugh, never mind. Risi Competizione also going back. Yes, that sounds like an Italian team. Well, it's an American team that runs an Italian car.
From Texas.
Yeah.
God bless Texas.
Yeah, with an Italian driver and a Swedish driver. But
and they lost one of their Italian drivers to Porsche of all places.
Yeah, who is now a Porsche factory driver. Which I thought was interesting. Gianmarino, who is a Bruni?
Yeah.
Gianmarino Bruni, now a Porsche factory driver. GTAM, and also your GTAM, which is kind of just, it's the last year's car, more or less. You can't have, you know, the brand new Ferrari or the brand new Porsche or the brand new Corvette. Last year's car, 16 cars in that field, two car effort from Scuderia Corsa. Lots of American drivers in that, and not an American driver, but somebody that we all love, Christina Nielsen, returning, back with them, which is great. Also a German team, but you may know Dempsey Proton Racing under the German, flag, but nonetheless, this is Patrick Dempsey's effort.
Patrick Dempsey's all American, so fly whatever flag you want.
Yeah.
The ladies know differently.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Looking forward to it a lot, to say the least. I love Le Mans. I love thinking about it. And this is 60 cars that we've seen on the entry list. 60 cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great sign. You know, the P2 news is fantastic. I think instead of an also-ran class that we will pay very little attention to, I think it gets a lot of coverage this year. Certainly the battle at the front is going to be, you know, it's going to be covered. There's no doubt. But I think that we will see a lot more because of the American involvement in P2 now. You're going to see a lot more coverage of that class.
Yeah, it should be exciting. Looking forward to it. Wire, as we get out of here, we might take a next week or so off, then come back, kind of start getting into it. But racing season is, we're kind of in that period where we got about another month before it really gets going.
Yeah, or less. I mean, we'll be back maybe before the week before Sebring.
Yeah.
To see what's going on. But we're continuously monitoring, you know, the happenings in the racing industry, and we want to be able to bring you guys the latest and greatest.
Well, Wire, I have some latest and greatest.
You have breaking news.
It's not breaking news, okay. But it's some very, very good news. Kimi Raikkonen is set to open a karaoke bar.
Oh, well, that is almost breaking news.
So, Mr. Wire, what's the first song you sing at Raikkonen's karaoke bar?
I don't sing Finnish.
No? No, really? Come on.
Leave me alone. I know what I'm doing.
There you go. Those will be some excellent lyrics to sing at Kimmy's karaoke bar.
Can you put that to music?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody has. I'm sure somebody's auto-tuned it to the hilt, and it's on YouTube somewhere. But yeah, Kimi Raikkonen, I find that would be fun. Now, it would be fun because, let's be honest, Kimi Raikkonen likes to enjoy a drink.
I was going to say, it's no surprise he's opened a business associated with alcohol.
No, that's not a big surprise there. I wouldn't mind, you talk when you have a presidential election going on, everybody talks about, well, it's the beer quotient. You know, who would you want to have a beer with? Would you rather have a beer with Donald Trump, or would you rather have a beer with Hillary Clinton? Neither. I want to have a beer, or probably vodka, and a lot of it with Kimi Raikkonen and take some karaoke.
Yeah, he'd probably be top of the list.
Yeah, I think he's at the top of the list. So, hey, if you're going to Finland, check out Kimi's bar, man.
I may do that.
Otherwise, in the world of racing, we'll be back here in a little bit. But I want to say one thing. We are back podcasting. Have a lot of people have found it. Thank you for linking to it. The show website is themotorsportshour.com, but you can find us on any podcatcher, as they call me. You know what a podcatcher is?
Oh, no, but you're going to tell me.
Yeah, but so you can find us on pretty much any podcatcher. I want to thank you for doing so. And we're glad to be back podcasting. We're committed to do it now for all eternity. But you know what? This year is year 14 we've done this show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty stellar.
Yeah. So
and
glad
thanks to Rollins
back
for giving us the venue.
Absolutely.
To do so.
Absolutely. Glad to be here doing it. And we'll be here off a couple weeks and then back for Sebring Formula One, all that kind of good stuff. Mr. Wire, before we get out here, anything else, my
friend? Stay tuned for more.
Yeah, all kinds of good stuff coming up in the 2017 season. So on that note, we will be getting out of here. For Chris Wire, my name's Clark Sprinkle. Check us out online, themotorsportshour.com. Until next time, bye-bye. Boom, 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 boom